I'm Bonnie Faulkner. Today on Guns and Butter, Maya Schoen and Ralph Schoenman. Today's show, Creating the Next Pandemic, Part 1.
We at the World Health Organization believe that the world is now in the gravest possible danger of a pandemic, said Dr. Shigeru Omi, the World Health Organization's Western Pacific Regional Director. Dr. Omi spoke these words February 23rd at a three-day avian bird flu conference in Ho Chi Minh City. He stated that the avian bird flu was much more deadly than the strain that was found in 1997 in Hong Kong, and that there is an increasing risk of the avian influenza spread that no poultry-keeping country can afford to ignore. 2 days earlier, at the American Association for the Advancement of Science, Dr. Julie L. Gerberding, head of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in the United States, stated that scientists believe that it's highly likely that the avian flu virus that has swept through bird populations in Asia will evolve into a pathogen that is deadly for humans. We are seeing a highly pathogenic strain of influenza, Dr. Gerberding stated, a virus that will emerge to an extraordinary proportion across the entire western component of Asia. The reason that it's so ominous, she stated, is that the emergence of this new strain is one to which the human population has no immunity. What this means for us here in the United States and for people throughout the world is that the CDC and the World Health Organization are getting ready for a pandemic within 10 months. 10 months.
The Wall Street Journal, covering this orchestrated alarmist heralding the apocalypse, is very specific. Experts have repeatedly warned, the Wall Street Journal intones, that H5N1 bird flu virus will become far deadlier as it mutates into a form that will be easily transmitted among humans, sparking a global pandemic that will kill multi-millions. And Dr. Omi stated, as quoted by the journal, "The world is now overdue for an influenza pandemic, since mass epidemics have occurred every 20 to 30 years, and it has been nearly 40 years since the last one." Thus, Wall Street Journal citing the World Health Organization, the world on the verge of a pandemic from bird flu, we're already over the time limit when it has to occur. The World Health Organization states, estimating the impact of the next influenza pandemic in its report from Geneva on December 8, 2004, and it states again that influenza pandemics are recurring and unpredictable calamities. World Health Organization and influenza experts worldwide are convinced that the appearance and widespread distribution of an avian influenza virus, influenza A/H5N1, will ignite the next pandemic.
And what do we mean by a pandemic? In 1918 through 1919, the H1 virus, called the Spanish flu, which was first reported in Canton, China, spread rapidly throughout Asia, Europe, North and South America, Africa, India, Australia, and New Zealand. No country was spared. There were three waves of the influenza epidemic. The second wave, which appeared in late August 1918, was the most lethal. There was a sudden onset of high fever, incapacitating aches and pains, severe headache, and collapse and prostration within hours and days. The third wave hit in February, March, and April of 1919. It became known as the Spanish flu because of the first press reports in Spain, where journalists reported extensively on the impact of this strange sickness. Over half the world's population became sick with the flu. That's 1 billion people out of the world population in 1918 of 1.7 billion. As many as 40 to 50 million people died, 7 million people in India alone. That is 4% of those stricken with the disease. Today, there are 6.4 billion people in the world. Imagine what it would be like if half of them came down with a deadly disease. The avian flu virus, H5N1, is very similar to the Spanish flu, H1 virus, except that it has been more virulent. Today, 76% of those stricken with the avian flu virus are dead. 76%. The Spanish flu pandemic of 1918 and 1919 killed more people than any single outbreak of disease, surpassing even the Black Death of the Middle Ages. It's difficult for us to visualize the consequences and what it was like back then. Schools, factories were closed. This is the period of World War I, and more soldiers died from the flu than from the weapons of war. 4% of those stricken, that is 4% of half of the people in the world at that time, died. And today, 76% of the people who are stricken with the current avian flu virus, H5N1, are dead. In 1957, a second pandemic struck. This was another virus, and all these viruses find their origins from bird viruses. H2 virus, the Asian flu it was called. Again, it originated in China in February 1957. This killed thousands in the United States in late summer and early autumn of that year. But throughout the world, there were 1 million people dead. Again, in 1968, another virus struck. This is the H3 virus, another permutation of the avian viruses. A Hong Kong flu, it was called, and there were 750,000 people struck dead throughout the world.
Well, when we speak about the place of origins, such as the claim that this originated in China, as we will develop and evaluate in the course of this program, the appearance of this pandemic disease has nothing to do with its actual point of inception. It's merely where the introduction has taken place, and I think we have to bear that in mind. The specific characteristics of the future pandemic virus, says the World Health Organization, cannot be fully predicted, except to say that it will affect between 20 to 50% of the total population. Now, if we keep in mind that the 1918 flu affected nearly 59% of the population of the world, that 1 billion people was almost 60%, in fact, of the total population. Today, that would represent 3.6 billion human beings who would die as a consequence. And that's the kind of pandemic that the World Health Organization is presenting as almost certain. The scale, they say, may not be of that magnitude, or it may be even greater, but it'll be of that order of calamity. And in fact, if we look at the constant leitmotif of this prospect, we see that every major news instrument has been promoting it. Here's ABC, Channel 7, on March 7th. Avian flu deadlier than SARS. Health leaders around the globe believe the world is perilously close to a deadly pandemic stemming from the bird flu. It may seem alarmist, but ABC7's Dr. Dean Edel got a unique look at what the California Department of Health is doing to prepare for this threat. And then it cites Dr. Andrew Pavia, Infectious Disease Society of America, as follows. It's bigger than the threat of anthrax. It's bigger than the threat of smallpox. It's not a question of perhaps or maybe. It will happen. The only question is when and how bad. In fact, the World Health Organization has stated that this particular avian flu virus needs only a slight mutation to turn into a form that will spread fully to human beings, and we will be facing a deadly, uncontrollable, worldwide pandemic Tommy Thompson, former Secretary of Health and Human Services, stated in February, the World Health Organization indicates that as many as 70 million people will die in the first phase of the pandemic flu. 70 million people.
The Financial Times on March 2nd wrote about what the British health officials expect to take place in Great Britain. The avian flu could kill at least 50,000. Now, this is their first estimate. Jeremy Lawrence, the health editor, wrote in The Independent, and it was again published in the Financial Times. At least 50,000 people could die in Britain, and possibly many more if an influenza pandemic struck, the government warned. Up to a quarter of the population might be affected by the disease. That's a quarter of the population of Great Britain. And it would be more serious than a seasonal flu. The reason they expect that only 50,000 people would die is that they are stocking up with the antiviral drug Tamiflu. The government is stockpiling 14.6 million courses of the drug. While the drug cannot prevent the flu, it would reduce symptoms and save lives only if the flu is diagnosed within the first 48 hours. But most people wouldn't know that they had this serious flu. They would just expect that they had the common cold or that these were the normal aches and pains of a regular flu.
The Hong Kong Times again. Bird flu is erupting across Asia. Is a human pandemic next? It is devastating the region's poultry population, and this is just the beginning. This is February 2nd, 2004, Hong Kong Times. Before he slipped into unconsciousness, 6-year-old Kaptan Bunmanu told his mother, "Mum, my chest feels like it's going to explode." On January 26th, after 2 weeks in a coma, Kaptan died in Bangkok's Sirirach Hospital, becoming Thailand's first acknowledged victim of avian flu, and it proceeds to describe the spread. And indeed, the article continues, there are many mysteries about the eruption of bird flu and how it has swept across Asia in just weeks, where and when the epidemic originated, how it spread so swiftly to so many countries. But this is not a fight that Asia can afford to lose. The economic and social fallout will be huge, starting with the death of millions of chickens, the resulting loss of countless jobs, tens of millions of dollars in revenue, and the far more dangerous threat that the particularly deadly strain of avian flu virus, described using a shorthand for its genetic makeup, H5N1, will mutate, mix with human flu viruses, and begin its spread as swiftly and devastatingly among people as it has among chickens.
In 1997, when the avian bird flu first demonstrated its unprecedented ability to infect humans, this took place in Hong Kong. And immediately, the government of Hong Kong ordered all 1.4 million of the territory's chickens and ducks to be slaughtered. You cannot imagine what this was like. 1.4 million chickens and ducks slaughtered at the same time. Still, 18 people in Hong Kong were infected, and six of them, one-third of them, died. And this was with a swift culling that the health officials expected cut off the potential for a greater disaster. Quote, "We believe we averted an incipient pandemic," says Kennedy Shortridge, the flu specialist who was at the core of the 1997 effort to prevent H5N1 jumping into the human population. "We need to eliminate the virus again, but this time it could take years. Already, there have been flare-ups of this bird flu in 10 Asian countries and territories, mainland China, Japan, South Asia, Taiwan, Thailand, Vietnam, Indonesia, Cambodia, Laos, and Pakistan." Scientists believe that the origin are migratory wildfowl. That is, the wild birds that roam throughout the world. They carry numerous viruses, but they are not infected. And they believe that while the migratory birds are not infected, that the domesticated fowl are not immune any longer from this avian flu virus.
Well, what we have to continue to understand when we describe the holocaust of fowl and birds and other creatures that human beings are now creating, millions upon millions of them being literally exterminated, is that the virus that is imputed to these other species is of dubious origin in their own lives. Once again, the theme, the Center for Disease Control in the United States, as reported by Associated Press on February 22nd, bird flu will cause pandemic. The bird flu virus will mutate to a human form that becomes as deadly as the ones that killed millions during three influenza pandemics of the 20th century. Dr. Julie L. Gerberding, head of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, said Monday that scientists believe it is highly likely that the virus that is sweeping through bird populations in Asia will evolve into a pathogen equally deadly for humans. We are expecting human cases to multiply over the next few weeks, Gerberding stated in remarks at the national meeting of the American Association for the Advancement of Science. And here's what she reports. The mortality rate amongst human beings is 72%. 72% of identified patients, stated Gerberding, documented cases. So they are projecting 72% fatality from humans who contract this disease. A pandemic indeed. They are orchestrating it. They are promoting it. They are predicting it. They are stating that it is inevitable.
You're listening to Maya Schoen and Ralph Schoenman, Creating the Next Pandemic, Part 1. I'm Bonnie Faulkner. This is Guns and Butter.
And we will discuss in detail how the viruses do jump to humans and the manipulation of viruses in the bioterror labs throughout the United States, China, and Europe. But before we do that, I want to go back to the notion that wildfowl are immune from the avian flu virus, and yet the domesticated fowl, the ducks and the chickens, are laid low, die within days. Jeffrey Musayef Masson, in his book, his wonderful book that I recommend to all of you, The Pig Who Sang to the Moon, The Emotional World of Farm Animals, discusses the physical changes that have taken place in sheep through the process of domestication. Compared to their wild forebears, domesticated sheep have smaller hearts and smaller eye sockets, and their brains are 20 to 25% smaller, too. The bodies and horns of domesticated sheep are smaller. Now, this is a physical difference between wild and domesticated sheep, but let's look at some of the health aspects, the difference between the lives of sheep in the wild and domesticated sheep. Masson writes, "It is possible that the domesticated sheep have lost some of their immunity to lungworms, tapeworms, and intestinal parasites, the bane of sheep farmers today. This means that the major diseases tormenting sheep today have been introduced by domestication. In their natural state in the wild, sheep would be at least partly immune and therefore lead healthier lives without medical intervention or drugs." In other words, the plague that is leading to the slaughter, the wholesale slaughter immediately of ducks and of fowl, of the poultry throughout Asia, which is, by the way, an important economic base for the small farmers of Asia. These birds are not immune from viruses that all the wild fowl are immune to.
I think it's important that we continue to illustrate the enormous propaganda effort that's being put into promoting this panic and this doomsday scenario. Preempting the influenza pandemic in science and technology, the Canberra Times in Australia, again reported by the Financial Times on March 7th. The world is now waiting for a devastating pandemic of influenza. It is not a question of if, but when. Virologist Alla, director of the World Health Organization Collaborating Center for Reference and Research on Influenza, established that most people in the field believe it is almost certain that we will have a pandemic. We had three last century. There have been several back through history, but there were pandemics in previous centuries that prepared for this one. And they predict this as something that is almost impossible to stop, except for the necessity for a crash program of vaccination on a great scale. Now, the vaccination that they are promoting, it's interesting enough, are the products of great pharmaceutical combines linked to governments that are funding the World Health Organization, the Center for Disease Control, Science and Technology, the Center for Reference and Research. They're getting funding from those who produce the vaccines that they are claiming are the only answer to a pandemic, which they say is inevitable.
You mentioned before the pervasiveness of this and the pandemic. In again, in this Time magazine article by Simon Elegant, February 2nd, 2004, is a human pandemic. Next, he mentions that bird flu has been detected in nearly half of Thailand's 76 provinces, and nearly 11 million birds were culled, that means destroyed, throughout the country. This is in Thailand. In fact, the avian bird flu, as we mentioned before, has been detected in 10 countries. And another version of it has appeared in the United States, where there is continual testing, in particular in Pennsylvania and Delaware, and large numbers of birds are destroyed at once. In Mexico, where this virulent avian influenza, H5N2, first appeared in Mexico in 1992, it started with a low pathogenicity, and it evolved. And this is what we will discuss, the evolution of the viruses, their mutations, and what is taking place in labs here in the United States to create even more highly pathogenic viruses. In Mexico, in 1992, the avian influenza, which had a low pathogenicity, evolved to a highly fatal form and was not controlled until 1995, 3 years later. And this is what they anticipate could happen when the virus mutates and crosses over to humans. And it crosses from the birds to swine to pigs, who are susceptible to both human viruses as well as the bird virus, and then there is a mixing of the viruses, and if a human is in contact and they have a low-grade flu, the virus can then be transferred to humans, and it can mutate within the humans and then spread throughout the human population. And thus, when you have these epidemics, they become pandemics rather rapidly. In 1983 to 1984, there was an epidemic in the United States of the H5N2 virus, and at that time it caused low mortality. But within 6 months, it too became highly pathogenic, with a mortality approaching 90%. Now, this is among the poultry population. During that time, this is, as I mentioned, in the United States, more than 17 million birds were destroyed, a value of $65 million. In 1999 to 2001, there was an epidemic in Italy of a different virus, the H7N1. Still, the N1 is related to what they call this avian flu virus. Again, it started with low pathogenicity, but it mutated within 9 months to a highly pathogenic form. And in Italy, they destroyed 13 million birds, with some of them dying naturally because of the intense destruction, the inflammation that destroys the animals where they can no longer breathe. There is a rapid death.
The Guardian, March 7th in London. What is a pandemic flu and where does it come from? It is a completely new strain of flu, a major shift in the genetic makeup of the virus, to which people have no immunity, which will spread rapidly around the globe. The Irish Independent, March 2nd, efforts to stop it, which include the slaughter of millions of chickens, have been unsuccessful. Scientists now say the virus known to scientists as H5N1 is entrenched throughout Asia. Anita Manning, USA Today, February 28th, why are health officials so worried? There is no vaccine against H5N1. It will spread in populations with no immunity to the virus. And because the virus is so unstable, it is only a matter of time before it becomes efficient at moving from person to person. And even when the vaccines are available, it takes months before the correct combination of viral strain types can be incorporated into the shot. And in the meantime, multi-millions of people will get infected. Time, March 7th. Asian bird flu has killed 40 people in China, Vietnam. It is spreading from person to person, from birds to humans. Fatal in two-thirds of the cases. World Health Organization warns the disease will mutate in a new form which will kill millions. Rebecca Smith, Evening Standard, London, March 1. The symptoms, the same as ordinary flu, headache, fever, muscle, joint pains. The illness progresses. Complications such as pneumonia lead to death. It will spread to millions. Jeremy Lawrence in The Independent, March 2. The Department of Health is rushing out a plan. Based on having 14.6 million courses of the antiviral drug Tamiflu, it will not be in time. Nigel Hawks in The Times, March 2nd. Is the risk overblown? Experts assess that it is steadily progressing towards a pandemic. David Stipp in Fortune on March 7th. A rooster in the morning market in Kuala Lumpur prepares for a pandemic. And so the theme continues to be enunciated wherever we look in the press of the world. Bangkok Post, scientists and health experts do not talk about the possibility of an influenza pandemic that would kill millions of people. The only speculation is about when it will happen. There is no question that there will be such a natural disaster. It is already overdue. Science is so concerned about the next worldwide flu epidemic because it is odds on it will be from the greatest killer strain, known as the H1 antigen, detailed and elaborated article in the Bangkok Post, BBC. World Health Organization warned bird flu pandemic that's on March 13th. The world is now in the gravest possible danger of a human flu pandemic triggered by the virus. The BBC reports last year bird flu swept through poultry in a dozen countries. 140 million birds have died or were slaughtered in an effort to contain this outbreak, an absolute holocaust of other species, 140 million birds killed, according to BBC. Again, the BBC. This on March 13th. Bird flu has pandemic potential. Michelle Roberts, the health reporter, will mutate and pass from human to human and trigger a pandemic, according to scientists. Nancy Cox of the U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention. The subtypes have proven their ability to jump the species barrier, and we will have a severe pandemic, or more severe than that which occurred in 1918, far worse. Nancy Cox, the U.S. Center for Disease Control, the BBC. Bird flu is passing from human to human. Scientists have said that it cannot be stopped. In 2004, avian flu infected people in 8 South Asian countries. And it is spreading. It is a worst-case scenario. The virus will combine with a human flu virus, the BBC orchestrates.
We've been discussing the World Health Organization and the Center for Disease Control and Prevention expectations of a human pandemic within the next 10 months, a pandemic of avian influenza. In 1918 to 1919, when there was a massive pandemic, there were over one half of the world's population, almost 60% of the world's population, stricken with the flu, which also had its origins in the bird virus. And of the 1 billion people who were stricken, 4%, almost 40 to 50 million people died. Today, with the avian flu virus, the current death rate, mortality rate, is 76%. There are 15 types of avian influenza. The one that is so virulent that it's been spread throughout Asia and for which 140 million chickens and ducks have been destroyed, this is the H5N1 virus. Over 10 countries, almost a dozen countries, 140 million birds, and so far there have been 55 human cases of the avian flu influenza in Vietnam, Thailand, and Cambodia, with 42 deaths. Now, let's look at this and some of the experimentation that is going on, because also leopards and tigers have been stricken with this avian flu influenza. And in the Netherlands, experimentation was done on cats. Yes, on cats. And as people know, there is a very large feral population of cats. Cats that, domesticated cats, spread throughout cities. And what they did in the Netherlands is they experimented with the avian flu virus to see if it could be transmitted to cats, and would the cats then spread the virus. In fact, they found that just like with the leopards and tigers who had been stricken with the avian flu virus, they could give the virus to cats by making a genetic change, and then the cats could then spread the virus. The process of reassortment, that is the mutation, the combining of the bird virus with human viruses that can take place, can also take place with cats, with mice, and then transmit again to humans, and then spread throughout the human population. These are the experiments, the maniacal experiments that are being done throughout the world.
Well, on the basis of this, the BBC reports, 1918 killer flu secrets revealed. Scientists have worked out how the virus which caused the world's worst flu epidemic infected man. The virus which claimed the lives of 50 million people around the world jumped from birds to human. The breakthrough, published in Science, will help doctors identify which future bird viruses pose a threat to man at an earlier stage. But the National Institute for Medical Research team warns that the viruses cannot be stopped from crossing between the species. And so the drumbeat goes on. And what, indeed, is the reality that underlies this enormous propaganda campaign? Plum Island, Lab 257. Nestled near the Hamptons, the fashionable summer playground of America's rich and famous, and in the shadow of New York City, lies an unimposing 840-acre island unidentified on most maps. On the few on which it can be found, Plum Island is marked red or yellow and stamped U.S. government restricted or dangerous animal diseases. Though many people lead the good life within a scant mile or two from its shores, few know the name of this pork chop-shaped island. Even fewer can say whether it's inhabited or why it doesn't exist on the map. Lab 257, the disturbing story of the government's secret Plum Island germ laboratory, blows the lid off the stunning true nature and history of Plum Island, this seemingly bucolic island on the edge of the largest population in the United States, is a ticking biological time bomb that none of us can safely ignore. This is a report on the book by Michael Christopher Carroll, Lab 257, The Disturbing Story of the Government's Secret Plum Island Germ Laboratory, based on innumerable declassified government documents and scores of in-depth interviews. The suspenseful account of the federal government germ laboratory exposes a secret world and startling revelations, including virus breakouts, biological meltdowns, infected workers, and periodic flushing of contaminated raw sewage into the New York area waters, and the insidious connection between Plum Island and the created Lyme disease, as well as the deadly 1999 West Nile virus outbreak, which has its origin in the laboratories of Plum Island. This work shows how the U.S. Department of Agriculture, which ran Plum Island for the last half century, it says it states far more than a wholesome grade A eggs and food pyramid. In fact, Plum Island's new owner, the Department of Homeland Security, has carried on with this work of creating viruses, of generating germs, of weaponizing for application throughout the world the biological agents that induce and cause pandemics.
You're listening to Maya Schoen and Ralph Schoenman, Creating the Next Pandemic, Part 1. I'm Bonnie Faulkner. This is Guns and Butter.
Since we're talking about viruses and the creation of viruses and the mutation of viruses, I thought it would be important for us to really understand how influenza viruses change over time by mutation. And I went to the Medical Encyclopedia and found this information. The constant changing enables the virus to evade the immune system of its host, so that people or animals susceptible to influenza and virus infection throughout life. The process works as follows. A person infected with influenza virus develops an antibody against that particular virus. But as the virus changes, the older antibody, that is the one that your body created to fight off the first virus, it no longer recognizes the newer virus, and reinfection can occur. That's why if you have a flu one year, next year it'll be a different flu, and you are sick again. The older antibody can, however, provide partial protection against reinfection, but not full infection, so that the second time you're sick, you may not be as sick as the first time. Type A viruses, and there are two types, type A and type B, and the avian flu, the influenza viruses, the ones that cause pandemics are type A. And they are divided into two subtypes, based on viral proteins. That's when we talk about H2N1. The H refers to hemagglutinin, and the N refers to neuraminidase. And this is the way they type viruses, like H2N1 or H3N2. And the types of changes that go on are mutations. There is a gradual evolution of a virus, which is called an antigenic drift. And then there is the abrupt change that can take place in either the H or the N proteins. And that is called a shift. And it is this sudden virus that emerges that can create the pandemics. Type A is found in swine, that is pigs, horses, whales, seals, and other animals. But wild birds are the only animals that have all type A subtypes. Some H5 and also H7, which we mentioned before, these strains of avian influenza are virulent. And as we mentioned before, 140 million birds were destroyed as a result of the H2N1 virus. Rarely is there human-to-human transmission. But what we are seeing now over the last few years is the rapid results of human-to-human transmission, as we are also getting the bird-to-human, the pig-to-human, and now the human-to-human transmission. Now, Ralph and I are convinced that this is the result of bioterrorism by our government and other governments of the world, as they are genetically changing these viruses and making them such that we no longer have and our bodies can no longer create natural immunities, and the domesticated birds who have been so genetically altered no longer have immunity against what would be naturally occurring viruses.
Let's look at the evidence. BBC. The corpse of those who died in the pandemic flu of 1918 are being dug up and their cell tissues are being harvested so that viral infected tissues can be permitted to be mutated in laboratories, the BBC reports. And then again, following up on that report on March 9th, killer flu recreated in the laboratory. Scientists have shown that tiny changes to flu viruses can render them as deadly as the 1918 strain. A U.S. team has added genes to the samples they obtained of the 1918 virus to a modern strain. Animals that they exposed to this composite died within days of symptoms similar to those found in the human victims of the 1918 pandemic. The research has been published in the journal Nature. The work by the U.S. team, led by Dr. Yoshihiro Kawaaka of the University of Wisconsin, was carried out under the tightest security of the Department of Defense. Experts focused on two genes they anticipated would play a key role in generating the infection process. And the report in the BBC states that the researchers stress that their experiment has been conclusive and their work will lead to better ways to recreate the virus and to control it. But what do they mean by control? Seattle Post Intelligencer, September 18, 2004, obtained 1918 killer flu virus to be tested in the University of Washington labs. The Armed Forces Investigation Unit will harvest and genetically reconstruct the virus. They plan to infect monkeys with the killer flu virus grown from the tissues exhumed from the victims of the 1918 epidemic. Experts believe that another killer flu pandemic is overdue. The University of Washington received a $12.7 million grant funded from Congress and $1.7 billion of biodefense appropriation to the National Institutes of Health to collaborate on mutating the 1918 flu. This project will create a new bug that infects people and will kill literally tens of millions of people, stated Ed Hammond, director of a biotechnology and bioweapons watchdog organization called the Sunshine Project, based in Austin, Texas. In fact, there is no regulatory protection, and on the contrary, the Department of Agriculture that runs the Plum Island Lab has taken the 1918 virus to the highest levels of laboratory experimentation, and indeed, the first step in the project is a grant to beef up the capacity to mutate the virus. The plan is to create enhanced levels of mutation of this viral agent. We're talking here about an absolute clear bioweaponization of this virus. Scientists at the Armed Forces Institute of Pathology have led the expeditions to dig up the 1918 victims and genetically reconstitute the virus. What we are describing here is a deliberate plan to create the very pathogen and the very pandemic that the world's press has been preparing us to accept as inevitable.
Let's look a little further at the work of the Armed Forces Institute of Pathology. They went several years ago to the Alaska tundra and brought back the samples of the virus from an Inuit flu victim. But this was not the only expedition. This was 4 or 5 years ago. The only expedition for the 1918 victims. In Great Britain, they went into a lead-lined casket of a woman who had been a flu victim. But most of the victims where they've gathered the genes of flu victims have been from areas where the victims were in frozen tundra, because the virus remains intact as long as it is frozen. This is interesting that it can survive indefinitely when frozen. So British scientists also went to Arctic Norway, to Svalbard Island, to Spitsbergen, and there they exhumed six young coal miners who also had been victims of the 1918 Spanish flu. So they have now many bodies, the six young coal miners, the Inuit flu victim, and the woman in Great Britain. Surprisingly, the virus remained intact when she was buried in this lead-lined casket. And they are experimenting with these flu lines and manipulating them, taking out portions of them and combining them with mouse viruses, and then seeing the deadly nature of this. And then also they're going to do this with primates. The lab facility that is at the University of Washington is going to infect monkeys. And as I mentioned before, in the Netherlands, they've been infecting domestic cats. And they say they are doing this to understand the flu, to create better vaccines, but in the process, what they are doing is creating more virulent flus for which they have no idea how they can contain.
Let's be clear about this. The public relations rationale for this clear military utilization of a virus which they are mutating into the most deadly combinant form has vanishingly little to do with protection. The top Russian medical scientist, as reported in Novosti on April 10, 2003, the top medical scientist in Russia, SARS was created artificially in a bioweapons lab. The virus of atypical pneumonia was created artificially as a bacteriological weapon, stated Sergei Kolesnikov, chief academician of the Russian Academy of Medical Sciences. Academician Kolesnikov, the virus of atypical pneumonia was deliberately and artificially created. It has been done so as a bacteriological weapon. He expressed the following opinion at a news conference in Irkutsk in Siberia. The virus of atypical pneumonia is a synthesis of two viruses, measles and infectious parotiditis and mumps, the natural compound of which is impossible. This can be done, he stated, only in a laboratory. It is creating a bacteriological weapon, and it is done as a design for infecting populations and for creating a climate of hysteria to enable the authors of this contrivance to impose policies which otherwise would be impossible to obtain acquiescence in a population. And here is the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists on March 13, 2005. Mixing bugs and bombs. For months, U.S. and coalition forces had scoured Iraq searching for biological weapons, and the labs that made them, in fact, are in the United States. In fact, these biofacilities are being built at nuclear weapons design sites, Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory in California, and Los Alamos National Laboratory in New Mexico.
Before we get into the extending, building more Bioterra labs and the incredible work that is being done, the maniacal work that is being done to create this pandemic, let's return to Dr. Yoshiro Kawako, who is the professor of pathological sciences at the University of Wisconsin-Madison School of Veterinary Medicine. Because the articles that he wrote October 7th, 2004 in the journal Nature and in Science, and which he reported from the press, made incredible science headlines because of the implications. And it is something that we really need to understand. He said, replacing only one gene is sufficient to make the virus more pathogenic. In the late 1990s, scientists extracted a handful of genes from the 1918 virus by looking into preserved lung tissue of some of the pandemic's victims. Now, subsequently, as we noted, they have exhumed many more victims, and they are spreading the samples of their lung tissue throughout the world and are manipulating them. The genes were sequenced, and two critical genes that make up the H and the N, that is the hemagglutinin and the neuraminidase protein keys that help the virus enter and infect the cells, were extracted, and then they engineered these new viruses. They engineered the viruses, and they found that it only took a little bit of engineering to create a much more virulent, a fatal virus that caused incredible inflammation, hemorrhaging, and death. Now, this has been reported in Science and in Nature and in much of the press, such as the New York Times on October 7th, 2004. And what the title of the New York Times article was, Critical Gene, a Suspect in a Lethal Epidemic. And what we're seeing now is the World Health Organization and the CDC are saying that we can expect a pandemic of something that is being created in laboratories here in the United States.
Well, the implementation of this is very clear. The article in the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists, Mixing Bugs and Bombs, elaborates. What should be even more controversial is where these biofacilities are being built. The new labs will handle, modify, and experiment with the most harmful agents known to humanity, including live anthrax, plague, Q fever, and botulism. They are being placed at nuclear weapons design sites, the Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory in California, the Los Alamos National Laboratory in New Mexico. Proponents say the new facilities will improve U.S. biodefense. But in reality, the bioware research and the nuclear weapons design have a danger for the world and have little to do with national security and everything to do, the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists states, with undermining global security. What we are dealing with here has been characterized by Leonard A. Cole, who is the professor of public health at Rutgers University, as the 11th plague. The 11th plague is an orchestrated event terrorizing the peoples of the world.
You've been listening to Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen, Creating the Next Pandemic, Part 1. I'm Bonnie Faulkner. I'm joined by Ralph Schoenman. Welcome, Ralph.
Thank you, Bonnie.
We've got a few minutes here. I know I'm looking very much forward to hearing Part 2 next week on Guns and Butter. I was very interested to hear you mention Lab 257. I have a good friend who has a very bad case of Lyme's disease, and he showed me that book just a few weeks ago.
Yes, Bonnie, Lyme disease is but the small bit of the arsenal that's come out of Lab 257, and Lab 257 is just a headliner of the labs that proliferate across the United States. Bonnie, I just came back from a four-day conference in Madrid, which involved delegates from 80 countries, and part of the work of that conference was the Africa Tribunal, which has been documenting the, frankly, the planned genocide of the population of the continent. Scientists and governments and health agencies now are projecting 90 million people to die of AIDS within the decade in Africa. This is a holocaust of the population of Africa. And part of the work that we have been in the process of developing includes the following. In 1987, the London Times published a front-page article in which they reported that a grid had been placed over the areas in Africa where the World Health Organization and the Center for Disease Control had imposed vaccination. In fact, these government agencies and private outsourced companies had made a deal with Mobutu in the Congo, and they'd actually leased huge areas of the Congo. And these programs of so-called vaccination were imposed upon the population. The London Times reports that when you placed a grid over the areas where these vaccinations occurred, there was a one-to-one correlation with the clusters of AIDS that emerged therein. the AIDS phenomenon and pandemic has the same character as this very avian flu and influenza pandemic that we're describing here. And the work that we did in Madrid with this international conference bore upon the fact that the system of private ownership as a means of production, so concentrated in the hands of the few, finds itself, in a sense, at war with the mass of the people of the world, because the impoverization and the epidemic disease that has been inflicted upon people has created a climate of insurrection. And the climate of insurrection is not latent. It is blatant, because people feel helpless, hopeless, and without anywhere to turn but to reject the system that has done this to them. And the populations themselves are targeted, no less than our own people. This is not some arcane mystery or a matter of a few evil people in any given administration. It is a part of a process through which the system itself is pitted against the populations over which it exercises such exploitative control. I think Lab 257 is a very important evidentiary demonstration of how this is operating. Leonard Cole's book, Clouds of Secrecy, which you and I have discussed on air so many times, documents 40 years of this sort of thing. And in the very Bay Area where we live, trillions of bacilli and spores of brain and spinal meningitis were released on the Bay Area, and over something like a tenfold increase in those two diseases here. So this is nothing very arcane or conspiratorial as such. It is rather a description of a system that is in terminal decay. And what we really concluded at that conference is that the crisis of the system is the crisis of humanity. And this evidentiary work that we attempt to do in these two programs is by way of showing the architecture and outline of what is happening.
Ralph, I'm glad you mentioned the Open World Conference. I had hoped to attend myself, but I am planning on getting some of the audio from that and making some shows out of that so that we can bring it to people here in the Bay Area. I wanted to let everyone know that you were listening to Creating the Next Pandemic, Part 1, with Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen. They can be reached at 707-552-9995, by email at takingaim@pacbell.net, or visit their website at www.takingaim.info. I'm Bonnie Faulkner. Guns and Butter is produced and edited by myself and Yara Mako. Leave us comments at 510-848-6767, extension 628. Give us an email at faulkner@gunsandbutter.net. Our website, www.gunsandbutter.net. I would like to thank our great engineer here, Erica Bridgman, who does such a terrific job for us on Guns and Butter. We're really very lucky, very fortunate to have someone so experienced. Thanks a lot, and we'll see you next week.